Happy Friday, everybody. This is Frank Moreno. Admit it, you had your doubts. You weren't sure you'd make it until Friday. Well, you're here, I'm here, and the weekend is here. Thank goodness. And not a moment too soon. All right, we have an action-packed show for you this morning because everyone's still talking about last night's debate. And we're actually going to be joined by the owner of our radio station, John Catsimatidis. Now, a lot of people know that John actually is in the grocery business. A lot of people know he's in the real estate business. But I'm not sure how many people are aware of the fact that John is in the oil business. So when I heard Joe Biden last night basically admit that he's going to seek to transition the United States off of oil, I had to call upon John to get his take on this from an economic and a political perspective. So we're going to be chatting with him in just a little bit. And then a little later, we're going to chat with Lauren Wright, Dr. Lauren Wright, excuse me. She is a professor at Princeton, and she's the author of a book called Star Power. And she's really one of the most she's one of the more astute observers of politics anywhere around. And Jennifer Bork-Cuevas, who's actually a licensed clinical social worker, she has some interesting takeaways from last night's debate. But forgetting about all that, there is one story that was in Newsday. I saw it in Newsday Online yesterday. I believe it's in the paper today. I just love this story. Love it, love it, love it. One grocery store owner is sparking reaction after offering a discount to shoppers who support President Trump. Good for this guy. Love it. Fresh Food Supermarket on Montauk Highway in Oakdale says that patrons will get 20% off almost everything they buy, except for beer. Store owner Jose Colon posted, he sounds like a, must be a white supremacist, right, Jose Colon? Jose Colon posted the offer on Facebook saying savings are capped at $20, but shoppers will get the discount if they tell the cashier they support the president. The Trump supporter voted for President Obama in 2008 and 2012, but supported President Trump in 2016 and plans to do it again this year. You know, first of all, I'm seeing more and more people like this who supported Trump in 2016, even though they were two-time Obama voters. That's what handed Trump the election in 2016. In states like Michigan and Wisconsin especially, people had voted for Obama twice and then wanted to change, and they said, let's try something different and go with Trump. And I think a lot of those people are going to stick with Trump this time around. So it's going to be very interesting to see that. But this guy, I commented on this guy's Facebook page to try and get him on the show this morning. So far, I haven't heard back. But if anyone knows Jose Colon or if anyone shops at Fresh Food Supermarket, please tell him I'd love to have him on the radio. If you want to email me or you want to have him email me, my email is frank.moreno@wabcradio.com. I respond to every email. Or you can text me at 816-8-MORANO. That's 816-8-MORANO. Already, as soon as this guy posted this offer, and he had to expect this was coming, there were calls to boycott this supermarket. If I lived anywhere near this place, this would be my new supermarket. And it's not even, well, okay, I guess it is because I support President Trump. But I thought there was something so great about this because right now, the most socially unacceptable thing that you can be right now in America is a Trump supporter. The thing in the business world, the thing in the business community, the thing in the corporate world that they don't want anybody knowing is that you're a Trump supporter. It's a surefire way to be blackballed. And this guy had to know that. And he said, you know, tough. I'm giving a 20% discount to all Trump supporters. This is nice. This is great. There were all sorts of calls to boycott this store yesterday on Facebook. So I'd love to see this guy get an uptick in sales because of all the Trump supporters flocking to his grocery store for the discount. Now, I am going to be voting for President Trump tomorrow, and that is because early voting, as I mentioned on the overnight show this morning, early voting begins tomorrow. Early voting on Long Island and all over New York is starting tomorrow. Suffolk County has 12 early voting sites, while Nassau County has 15. New York Attorney General Letitia James says they expect long lines like what's been happening around the country. James says there will be many volunteers at polling places to make sure things go smoothly. Well, actually, most of those people that are at polling places are paid. They're not volunteers. They're paid election workers. My mom works for the Board of Elections. We've spoken with the Suffolk County Commissioner of the Board of Elections, Nick LaLota, and these people are paid. These are not these aren't full-time employees of the Board of Elections, but they're, you know, they usually work election day and a day or two before and after. So they're not volunteers, but hopefully things go smoothly. I'd love to see things go smoothly. The last thing we need is a repeat of the election of 2000, or even worse, the election of 1876. So my advice to everybody has been pretty consistently, if you want your vote to count, vote early. Vote early in person. You don't have to worry about not signing the envelope. You don't have to worry about checking the wrong box. You don't have to worry about having improper postage. You don't have to worry about the Board of Elections sending you an address, an envelope with the wrong address that causes it to be invalidated. You don't have to worry about any of that. Getting lost in the mail. You don't have to worry about any of that. Vote early in person if you want your vote to count. That's what I'm doing. I do have to plug the Talk Radio 107.1 app. It's our brand new app. You can listen to this show wherever you want. You can just search Talk Radio 107.1 or 107.1 WLIR. And not only can you listen to this show live, you can listen to all the great shows that we have to offer on the station. Rich Valdez, the Cats at Night program, everybody. And you can also hear the podcasts of all the shows that are on this station. Now, a lot of you may be familiar with Ohika Castle in Huntington. I've actually been to Ohika Castle a couple of times. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal place. I love the movie Citizen Kane. I was talking about it this morning. And this building, Ohika Castle, was actually Xanadu in the movie Citizen Kane. That's right. Charles Foster Kane's residence, Xanadu, is Ohika Castle. That's where it was filmed. And if you've been to Ohika Castle, or even if you've been outside Ohika Castle and you watch the movie, you can tell that it is, in fact, Ohika Castle. So they're putting their plans to build condominiums on hold after owner Gary Milius pulled his proposal earlier this week. Milius says he wants to have all his ducks in a row before moving forward with a 90-unit four-story building that would have a parking garage underneath. The Cold Spring Hills Civic Association is worried about preserving the area's golf course. Oh, please. Golf. The golfers are always concerned. That's always their paramount concern. But the Huntington Town Board ultimately gets the final say. In order for the plan to be approved, Milius will need permits to bypass covenants and restrictions on preserving the golf course and address additional traffic lights along with a future sewer system. So I'm not sure with him converting this to condos eventually, not right away, what that is going to mean for the building itself. I would hate to see, look, it's not my building, but I would hate to see such a historic building like that with such a rich history lose any of its structural integrity or anything like that. So I wish the best for Gary Milius. And I wish the best for, you know, for everybody that enjoys going and visiting to Ohika Castle. Finally, before we get to John Catsimatidis, this is a little embarrassing. Before I was dating my wife, and she would stay over from time to time, I'd say from the time I was 10, maybe 9, up until the time I started dating my wife, I did not make my own bed once. I think making your bed is the most futile thing in the world. I think it's silly, especially when you have no visitors. And I know a lot of people disagree with this. I think it's absurd. Okay, so you make the bed all neat. Nobody's going to see it. Until when? Until when? Until you go to sleep again? I can understand if you're having visitors in your bedroom. But I never made my own bed until my wife, you know, kind of whipped me into shape because she likes it, I guess. I don't know. So now, and throughout the course of my marriage, really, I haven't been making my own bed because she makes it. Now, my wife and I are on different sleep schedules. I leave this show and I go home and go to sleep and I sleep during the day. So that means when I get up, it's now my responsibility to make the bed. But I don't understand how this making the bed thing even got started. What's the point? I think it's silly. Again, I'm doing it because I'm doing my best to be a good husband because my wife does a lot for me and for our household. So I'm not going to, you know, she asks so little of me. It's essentially just take out the garbage and make the bed when you're the last one out of it that I'm going to give it the old college try. But I just don't get it. Are you with me on this? Are you? Let me know via email, frank.morano@wabcradio.com, or you can also find me on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. I think it is pretty futile, and I think it's a little, I think it's kind of an idea that needs to go away. I mean, that's just my opinion. I don't know. All right, John Catsimatidis is coming up in just a minute. We'll chat with Dr. Lauren Wright in a little while, and we'll chat with Jennifer Bork-Cuevas. I will be – now, a lot of people get confused because I'm on Monday through Friday from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., so I will not be on tonight because technically if I were to be on tonight at 1 a.m., that would mean I would be on Saturday. So I will be back Sunday night into Monday morning. I'll be back Monday morning at 1 a.m. So I do hope you'll listen to me on the other side of midnight. Now, don't misunderstand me. We still have a lot more show to go today, but we are encouraging everybody to listen to that new show, The Other Side of Midnight. If you can't stay up that late, please subscribe to the podcast. There's nothing I'd love more than to go to our bosses and say, look, you take a look at all these people that are subscribing to the podcast. All you have to do is search The Other Side of Midnight in your app store or wherever you get your podcasts. I don't need your podcast, any podcast app, iTunes or any podcast app, The Other Side of Midnight. Well, everybody is still talking about the debate. And I tell you, one line during that debate last night when my jaw just dropped was when Joe Biden made no bones about the fact that he wants to transition away from oil. Now, forgetting about the fact that I was surprised that Biden was so honest about this, I'm wondering what this means for states like Pennsylvania, for states like South Dakota, for states like Texas. Texas, supposedly a battleground state this year, heavily reliant upon the oil industry. Well, it just so happens that the owner of our radio station, a good friend of mine, you could hear him each and every Sunday morning on this radio station from 8:30 to 10, and each and every Wednesday night from 5 to 6, John Catsimatidis happens to moonlight occasionally when he's not running radio stations and grocery stores as part of the oil business. So I was itching to get his take on that particular line. John, good morning. Thanks for joining me on the radio this morning.
Well, thank you, Frank. You know, we have 5,000 employees in the energy business, and most of them are in Pennsylvania. I guarantee those employees we have in Pennsylvania are not going to vote for Joe Biden. I mean, he keeps flip-flopping on oil, and now he announced that he wants to get rid of it completely. So between oil and wanting to raise everybody's taxes and the doubt, you know, there's a little bit of smoke on where the money is from China or Ukraine with his son. You know, he said, I didn't take any money from China. Well, his son took it.
Well, I want to ask you about the Hunter Biden situation, but just to finish up on the oil situation, you say I had no idea you had that many employees in Pennsylvania all in the oil industry. So you say those 5,000 folks probably won't be voting for Biden after this. I have to think the same holds true in other fracking states, other oil, heavily oil dependent states like Texas, like Oklahoma, other states that are in the purple column. Do you think that Biden misspoke or was he trying to throw a little red meat towards the left? Not that the hard left eats red meat, but was he trying to throw them something, or did he just, was that a slip of the tongue?
Frank, if you noticed, the first hour of the debate, he was much sharper than the last 15, 20 minutes.
I did notice that, actually.
Yeah, people have said that they drug them up in some way. And I hate to say that because I don't want to say those things. But it was obviously in the last 10, 15 minutes of the debate, he was struggling to get out of there.
Yeah, no, it's definitely clear. You know, forgetting about the stuttering, which I know people have pointed out that he's had a problem with stuttering his whole life. There were moments where he seemed to have trouble finding himself. First of all, on the question of the minimum wage, I thought the vice president handled that incredibly poorly. Now, you want to be for a higher minimum wage. I understand that. But then he goes and points to the first responders that everybody was clapping for. Now, I don't know of a state in this country, John, where a police officer or a firefighter or a frontline doctor or nurse or medical technician is not making at least $15 an hour. To me, that demonstrated how out of touch Biden is with what's actually happening in this country.
Well, what's the price of milk?
Yeah, so my wife does.
You remember that one?
Yeah, right. As long as we keep the grocery store scanners away from this debate, hopefully both candidates will learn their lesson. All right, you mentioned the Hunter Biden situation. If you're an undecided voter in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio, Nevada, Arizona, do you think that the president moved the needle at all by making a case that Joe Biden was corrupt? If you're undecided, not you and I are both, I think, decided and we're in the president's favor. But if you're on the fence and not sure who to vote for, did the president's attacks on Hunter Biden and the laptop from hell, as he called it, did that push any undecided voters more in a Trumpian direction?
I would say maybe 1 or 2%. And well, that could make a difference.
That is for sure, as we saw in 2016. Now, the issue of health care, right? You're a business guy. You have to pay the health care for a lot of employees, including this one. And I'm curious, with Joe Biden basically backing off of Trump's attack on him, of Trump saying he wants single-payer health care, Biden denying that, is that something you think voters will believe, or do you think that this is just kind of Obamacare 2.0?
What Trump said, there's 180 million people with private health care that they want to keep their private health care. That's a lot of people, 180 million. And when Joe Biden uses his numbers, you don't know who he's talking about. Is he talking about giving illegal aliens health care? I mean, I don't think there's an illegal alien that doesn't get some kind of health care, because if you show up at a hospital, they're required to take care of you no matter who you are. So I don't see anybody dying because they don't get proper care. The other big thing that disturbs me is about he's going to maybe tear down those borders that we finally have control of our borders, Frank. And he wants to get rid of them.
Well, it certainly was very interesting to hear the former vice president keep going, basically ignore when President Trump pointed out the fact that the cages that the vice president alluded to were built under the Obama-Biden administration. But we're about 10 days away from the final day of voting. I'm going to be voting early tomorrow. What do you think, if you were giving advice to Team Trump, and maybe you do, I know you're pretty tight with the president, if you were giving advice to Team Trump, what would you tell him to focus on message-wise and strategy-wise for the next 10 days?
I would say that tax increases, the fact that, you know, he came out and said there's going to be 200,000 more people dead by the end of the year and those numbers don't exist.
No, well,
I mean, he makes up the numbers. Well, and it's horrible. I mean, I think we got the virus under control to a great degree.
Back to the era of fuzzy math, I guess, right? You know, one of the reasons I love doing this show is we get to talk to the people of Suffolk County. And this is a county that went for Trump, but it also elected a Democratic county executive and a Democratic district attorney. A lot of people are saying that the key to this election for Trump or for Biden is going to be suburban women, the kind of suburban women that live in places like Suffolk County. After seeing this debate last night, do you think Trump did anything to make himself a little more likable to those suburban women that the pollsters say he needs to do a good job winning over?
Well, I think he should have mentioned what got Andy Spano. He lost the Westchester election because of it, that they plan to put affordable housing into middle class neighborhoods. In other words, in the middle of Southampton or the middle of East Hampton or West Hampton, they want to put affordable housing.
Yeah, and we know what that means when they say affordable housing. It means essentially the destruction of the character and integrity of the neighborhoods that these people have grown up with. Any thoughts at all, speaking of Suffolk and the races that we're watching out there, what happens with Congressman Lee Zeldin? He's in a very, very tight race. This district is always competitive. Any thoughts about how you think that race turns out?
I think Lee Zeldin was a war hero. He served our country. And he served our country, continued to serve his country through being a congressman. And he's a straight arrow. I know his family. He has two beautiful daughters. And he's a very, very straight arrow, very decent guy.
According to the polling, and if people are just tuning in, you're listening to Talk Radio 107.1. We're talking with John Catsimatidis. You can hear him Sunday on the Cats Roundtable in just a minute. We'll give you a preview of what you can expect on Sunday morning. According to the polling, which I, like you, I heard you on John Batchelor's program last night. I am like you and am reluctant to believe any of this polling. However, the pollsters say that the president's biggest issue, his biggest strength, is the economy, and his biggest weakness is his response to the COVID crisis. In the next 10 days, what can President Trump do to make his strong point, the economy, even stronger and sort of diminish his weak point, which, according to the polls, seems to be COVID?
Well, I think he's done everything you could possibly do. He has called upon American companies, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, all of them, to come up with a vaccine. And they're very close. And I think he says they're going to do it before the end of the year. What other president has ever come up and said, we're going to develop an answer or solution at warp speed? And I think he's got it. I think we have it under control.
Well, let's hope so. And hopefully the voters see that as well. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the next 10 days turn out. John, before I let you go, give us a preview of what's coming up on Sunday's Cats Roundtable. This is an action-packed edition of the Cats Roundtable.
Yeah, we have one great show. We have Larry Kudlow.
Oh, from the White House. All right.
And he's been responsible for, for the economy. And the economy has been the greatest economy up to COVID. We have Jeanine Pirro to tell us the way it is and what's going on with the Justice Department. And the Justice Department, Sidney Powell.
Ooh.
She knows Washington and knows the Justice Department, and she's very disappointed in what's going on with the Justice Department, the FBI, and the CIA, and he's going to be talking about it. Dr. Michalos, like always, Dr. Michalos will talk about some new revelations in the virus. And Dershowitz, he's one smart Harvard lawyer. And we have some interesting questions to ask.
John, every day on this show, I've been showing folks the statistics. I've been talking to experts chronicling the exodus of Manhattan residents from Manhattan to places like the Hamptons, right? I'm curious, do you see this abating anytime soon? I know you have a residence out in the Hamptons as well, and you deal with a lot of part-time Manhattan residents. Is this going to continue for the foreseeable future, or now that fall is here, will we see some of these New Yorkers head back into the city?
Some of them are heading back. Some of them are staying out in the Suffolk County for 3 days a week or 4 days a week, and maybe go in on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays like I used to do.
All right. Well, it's going to be an interesting show on Sunday. Alan Dershowitz, Larry Kudlow, Judge Pirro, just to name a few. And we're just getting started here on Talk Radio 107.1. This is Frank Morano on Talk Radio 107.1 FM and on WABCRadio.com. Everybody is still talking about last night's presidential debate. So far, the only thing there seems to be an overwhelming consensus on is that the big winner was the moderator, Kristen Welker, who is just getting rave reviews across the political spectrum. Well, somebody that I have really admired for a long time, somebody that is one of the most astute observers of politics and political communications, maybe that I've ever met, but certainly that I've ever heard on radio or TV, is Dr. Lauren Wright. She's an associate research scholar and a lecturer. She is a professor at Princeton University, and she is an author. Her book, Star Power, really does a brilliant job capturing the nexus between politics and celebrity these days. And she's kind enough to join us for a few minutes on the radio. Dr. Wright, good morning. Thanks for joining me on the radio.
Hi, Frank. Thank you for that introduction. I hope I can live up to those standards.
Well, so do I. It's not every day that I get to interview Ms. Wright, let alone Dr. Wright. So it is my pleasure. What were your overall impressions of the debate? What did you think of last night's debate as it compared to the first matchup between these two men?
Well, like you said, calmer, good moderating. But I think, you know, the mute button what ended up being a good idea, because I think that even just the threat of it kind of kept both candidates from interrupting. It was kind of like, you know, Pavlov's presidential candidates or something, but they seemed scared to talk over each other or didn't want that to happen, at least. So, you know, I thought that ended up being good. You know, there was still a little bit of back and forth. They really diverge on a lot of issues, but you know, Trump is really sticking to the Hunter Biden attacks. He's sticking to the what have you done for 47 years attack. And, you know, didn't have as much of a positive message for the future as I was anticipating. Didn't have as much of that self-deprecating humor we were told we would hear from advisors. But overall, such a low bar was set from the first one, as you said, that it was, I think it was a welcomed type of debate for most people.
No question. There was it was a much more disciplined Donald Trump than we saw in that first debate. My question is, now, the Trump supporters are just ecstatic. They think he did really well. And I was just happy that we actually got to hear what each of the candidates wanted to do with respect to all these different issues. I mean, you really did get a sense of two very starkly different visions for the country. And we actually got to hear what they were saying instead of listening to them interrupt one another and talk over one another and say, shut up and insult each other. Do you think, though, even with a substantive debate that people got to hear the answers, do you think that this moves the needle at all in either direction? Does this change anybody's vote?
No, not very many people, because there's a few things preventing that from happening. One is these debates are a little bit ridiculous. We have this system that is more entertainment than information. And so the very structure of it discourages the long answers you might want to hear if you are interested in policy. Second, you know, it's the second one. We're closer to the election. More people have made up their minds. And then the thing is, most people who tune in are partisans cheering for their party rather than looking for something to help inform how they should vote. So, you know, it's set up in a way that really almost makes sure that nothing changes. Of course, there can be a dramatic moment that might get picked up by the media and recirculated. And what might happen is either the negative or positive narrative a candidate has going for them, if that's reinforced by the debate, which I think it was, you know, probably on the behalf of both candidates, that just gets added to the pile of information maybe those undecided voters will draw on. But on its own, it's just very hard to parse the effect of a debate with everything else going on in the political environment.
And now a lot of people are expecting a blowout. right? The polling certainly suggests that we could very well see a Biden blowout. Now, when you bring this up with a lot of Trump partisans, they'll point out the fact, well, wait a minute. A lot of these same polls showed a similar landslide victory for Hillary Clinton back in 2016. What do you think about where the polls are at this point as compared to 2016? And could we be in store for another surprise, the likes of which we saw 4 years ago?
I mean, it's not impossible. And, you know, I look at the polls. They are all pointing in a consistent direction. The gap seems to be growing rather than shrinking, which is not what we usually see as we get closer. But, you know, as you said, you know, we have these probabilistic forecasts with what's the chance someone will win. And those are actually really harmful, researchers have found, because they confuse people. People don't think about elections in terms of probabilities. And that's what sort of happened last time with the New York Times and 538, with the 70% chance Hillary will win and the 30% chance Donald Trump will win. You know, it's better just to look at straight polls and averages, not think about, you know, this type of coverage. That's probability, and it actually suppresses votes in some cases, and it doesn't really help anyone. So, you know, I would urge people, yes, to take these polls with a grain of salt, but they do have more uncertainty baked in than the ones last time, and some issues were fixed.
You know, there was a little bit of discussion of the Hunter Biden matter. Really, I don't know if discussion is the right word. There was an allusion to the Hunter Biden matter, and it was not really responded to by Joe Biden. The president tried to utilize a similar tactic to the one he did 4 years ago when he had all these Bill Clinton accusers do a press conference the day of the debate to try to control the narrative and try to rattle Hillary a little bit. This time around, there was a big press statement by Hunter Biden's former business partner, essentially calling Joe Biden a liar. I'm curious, what effect do you think this whole Hunter Biden situation has on the election for the next 10 days?
In this political environment, probably little. And that's because there are just big issues that affect people every day that are much more important, namely the economy. You know, if you lost your job, how will you get your health care? How do you put food on the table for your kids? And the pandemic, people are still worried about that, and they're worried about the health of their businesses. So I would say, in a booming economy like what we saw, you know, more like 2016, those might be issues that would make people's ears perk up. But when you're dealing with, you know, a deep recession and major problems, people don't probably have as much appetite to hear those types of scandals.
By the way, if people are just tuning in, we're talking with Dr. Lauren Wright. She's an associate research scholar, a Princeton lecturer, and author of a terrific book, which, if you're interested in politics or celebrity, you should check out. It's called Star Power. In the history of presidential debates, Lauren, we've seen a number of very quotable lines. You know, we remember Reagan Carter, there you go again, in 84, Reagan saying he wouldn't use Mondale's youth and inexperience against him. Dukakis making the gaffe in 88 of, you know, acting like he didn't care if somebody, you know, if somebody were to be put on trial for a capital case and they had murdered his wife. You had the situation with George H.W. Bush in 1992 looking at his watch. You had the situation even just 4 years ago with Donald Trump saying that if somebody like him had been president, that she'd be in jail. These two debates really didn't produce much in the way of memorable lines or memorable gaffes, did they?
No, I would say Shut Up, Man will probably be in the mix there when we look back at these. But you're right. I mean, neither candidate has that sort of communication style that makes us think we'll be reading about it in speech writing classes. But, you know, maybe we'll see something different in a possible second term or in a Joe Biden first term.
What would you like to see done differently in presidential elections? What lessons should the political parties, the people that administer elections, the people that run the presidential debates, the media, what lessons should we take from this to sort of build upon and improve upon 4 years from now?
I think we have some major problems that are probably more difficult to tackle and some immediate things that we actually have some preliminary research on and could help. So, you know, in the first category, I think opinion journalism makes it tough for people to trust media. And I understand that. I understand why there's a lot of mistrust among Democrats and Republicans, and why it encourages people just to consume news that reinforces their existing beliefs. I also think in general, when we package politics like entertainment, yes, we get more people involved and we get more eyeballs, and that certainly could be a public good. But it gets, you know, as we talked about, watered down so much that people are no longer being informed, or they might just tune out of politics altogether and choose pure entertainment. You know, there's also some good research being done on mail-in voting and early voting right now. The early voting research is pretty interesting to me because what you have, again, is more people voting, which is a democratic good, but people voting with different information at different stages in the election cycle. And so, you know, I'm glad that we're looking at these things, and certainly, you know, the pandemic unfortunately provides an opportunity to see the impact of mail-in voting on such a large scale. But, you know, some of these things researchers have been looking at and aren't really sure what, you know, does the public good outweigh some of the unintended consequences? That's really the question with any expansion of democratic participation.
You know, you wrote the book on star power in politics, and we've talked before about all of the celebrities that have been able to migrate to the world of politics successfully, people like Ronald Reagan, people like Sonny Bono, people like Jesse Ventura, people like Clint Eastwood, and certainly Donald Trump would fit that category. I'm curious, after this, right, do you think we're ready for a return to a more conventional politician, or are we going to see more of these celebrity-style candidates be successful? Could we be seeing a big groundswell of support for Kanye West, for instance, 4 years from now?
If we keep having these huge primaries in both parties, we very well might see more celebrities. And surely Donald Trump has shown other celebrities the path. You can go straight to the top. You don't even have to run for a lower office first. And, you know, in my research and others shows that's not particularly good. Politicians, celebrities rather, who run can become effective politicians, but they really have to leave the hyperbole and the drama behind on the campaign trail to govern effectively. And celebrities, for a lot of reasons, are just very poorly suited to do that. So I think that phenomenon is not going anywhere. And thanks for bringing that up.
According to the polling, it looks like the strongest issue that Donald Trump has going for him is the economy. It looks like the weakest issue that he has going for him is COVID. In this election, which of those do you think is a more powerful force for the handful of swing voters in swing states?
I would guess COVID, because we know people, especially with an incumbent president, tend to vote retrospectively. And that's what you see in a lot of these questions where people are answering that they're voting against Trump rather than for Biden. It is an election that's a referendum on Trump's performance handling COVID. With that said, the economy and healthcare are still such important issues for both Democrats and Republicans that they are starting to eclipse some of the other ones. Supreme Court seat has reached higher on the list of important issues for Republicans. It's actually about the same as COVID right now. But for Democrats, it's not really anywhere near the top. And I would just say it's interesting to me that as an incumbent president, with this formal cloak of the presidency that many candidates wish they had. It's interesting that Trump is not campaigning more on a straight economic message, on Amy Coney Barrett, these traditional issues, rather than some of the scandal and personal attacks.
Well, and if there's anything we've seen from Donald Trump, love him or hate him, he is anything but traditional. Lauren Wright, thank you for the time this morning. Let's do it again soon.
Thanks, Frank.
Check out Lauren's book, Star Power. It is a must read, and it's a quick read. You know, it's not a book that's going to take you a month and a half to read. You can finish it in a couple of days. It's a well-done book. Before we get to our next guest, Jennifer Bor-Cuevas, I just want you to take note, Long Islanders. Today is your lucky day if you are a movie lover. Movie theaters across New York and right here on Long Island are opening today after Governor Cuomo gave the green light last week. Regal and AMC Theaters say they'll be opening locations today, including facilities in Huntington, Westbury, and Rockville Center. The state's guidelines only allow theaters to reopen at 25% capacity or 50 people in each theater, and they require people to wear masks in hallways and bathrooms. So I guess that's nice. You could take them off during the movie itself. Cuomo says moviegoers can take off their masks in the theater to munch on popcorn and drink some soda. That is certainly good news. But getting back to last night's debate, I always enjoy hearing the perspective of Jennifer Bor-Cuevas. Jennifer is a regular on this show. She has been a warrior when it comes to fighting for children and their right to learn in an actual school building. Imagine that. She also happens to be a licensed clinical social worker and a disaster mental health professional. Jennifer, looks like last night's debate was far from a disaster. Am I right?
You are correct. It was civil. It was an actual debate last night.
So what were your key takeaways from it? What did you think?
You know, I have to say I was impressed with Donald and how composed he was. And I do think, you know, that he was able to express his anger rather than act it out, which was nice. And I wish he could do more of that. But, you know, their plans, the plan between Joe and Donald for moving forward, especially now with an audience that is mitigation fatigued and that is struggling financially, and that our children are not in school. I think that Donald has a very black and white plan, whereas I think Joe's plan is more complicated. Look, Donald, he wants the nation to go back to the way it was. He wants us to learn how to live with COVID because it isn't going anywhere very soon. Whereas I think Joe Biden wants us to move more slowly with returning back to normal. My concern with that, though, is that Donald Trump believes that a vaccine is the answer, and it's a very black and white answer. He needs to factor in that many parents don't feel confident with a vaccine just yet. So I think that's going to be his next stumbling block, even though it sounds like it's going to be ready soon and that he has a plan to distribute it via the military. I think he's going to be met with resistance.
Well, so what would you suggest if you were advising the president or any public official about how to get the public on board and buying into a vaccine and embracing the fact that a vaccine will be safe?
Well, I think transparency is a very big thing. I think maybe starting to get the nation psychologically ready for a vaccine, could be helpful in terms of addressing people's fears about it. However, you know, Frankie, we can't dismiss that a vaccine needs to be studied. It needs to be researched, studied. Time needs to be spent with it before it starts going into people's bodies. So there's no substitute for that. Yeah. But I do think we need to get ready psychologically. And I got to tell you, I don't think that we're even going to be ready psychologically to think about that until after the election, because the election stress and decision fatigue has set in for most people.
So people don't just have COVID fatigue, they have decision fatigue.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Look, people are feeling that just things are so beyond their control at this point. And, you know, this election stress, I think, you know, I fear and people fear that there's going to be even more divisiveness. And interestingly enough, I want to say that I think people are experiencing maybe some, you know, very light brushstrokes of PTSD and going back to the way they felt in the 2016 election. You know, the Dems felt shocked and angry when Donald was elected, and you know, the Republicans felt vilified. I think that we need to deal with those emotions that, you know, we all felt sort of traumatized in a way, in our own way, in 2016. So, you know, when you're dealing with election stress right now, you want to be aware of the feelings you had in 2016. You want to be careful of managing your anger, because I think people are more angry now than I ever remember in my lifetime. And you want to be careful not to alienate your relationships. I am seeing so much of that, even in my own family, where if we are, you know, people who are on opposite sides of the table are not talking to each other over it. So these are the things we need to keep on the forefront of our mind as we go through the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that is so true, and it's a real shame. Just going back to the debate for a moment, what role do you think the threat of a mute button played in the change in temperament that we saw in last night's debate?
Oh, I think that mute button was key. I think that it also helped in the two gentlemen maintaining their civility, because I don't think they wanted to be seen being put on mute.
Right, sure.
So I think it was helpful.
Well, if people are just tuning in, we're talking with Jennifer Bork-Cuevas. She's a licensed clinical social worker, but also an astute observer of the human condition. Any takeaways from the body language between the two men yesterday? I mean, I know there was some distance between the two of them, and there was plexiglass, so maybe there's not as much to read from the body language as there normally might be. But I'm just curious if you took anything away from their facial expressions or anything like that.
Yes, I saw Donald working very hard via his body language to really try not to go there. At certain times, I thought he was going to blow his teeth out. And I think that Joe used humor. You know, you could see him looking down a lot. You could see him smiling. You could see him, not so much humor, but maybe being more condescending or being more dismissive via smiling. So, yes. But look, I think they both made excellent points. And I think that what we really need to focus on as a nation is how to walk the balance of living with COVID, getting back to some sort of state of normalcy while living with COVID, and, you know, not creating other public health crises along the way. I would like to make a shout out to New York Parents and Teachers Against Distance Learning. They have finally started serving papers. Our lawsuit is up and running, and certain regions of New York have been served legal papers regarding the shutting down of schools. And we are on our way. So the lawsuit challenges the unlawful and unconstitutional measures put in place in New York State in response to COVID-19 pandemic, specifically the shutting down of schools. So I just want to make a shout out to them that we're on our way with our lawsuit. And anybody can still join our class action suit. You just go to the Facebook page and you.
So give us the Facebook page again. How do they find you guys?
It's New York Parents and Teachers Against Distanced Learning, and you're looking for the Noise campaign. All you have to do is just sign up and give your information, give a paragraph about how you feel the closing of schools affected your children, and your name can be put on the lawsuit.
Mm. Well, you're doing great work there, and I know there are a lot of parents across Long Island and across the state that are very, very thankful and appreciative of the work that you're doing. Thank you for the time this morning, Jennifer.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, that about wraps it up for me. If you want to stay in touch, you can email me at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. You can also find me on Twitter at @FrankMorano. Hope you have a great weekend. If you are not caught up with anything we're doing on the overnight show, you can go to wabcradio.com and check out the podcast. And you could also subscribe. Just search my name, Frank Morano, wherever you get your podcast. Have a great weekend, folks. Frank Morano, good day.